The Apostle Paul did stand-up comedy. I kid you not. The Apostle Paul, stand-up comedy. Where? In Caesarea. I'm going to prove it to you today. Yeah, it was like a... It was like Comedy Central there. I mean, a guy has a sense of humor when he's being tried for his life. Yeah, I have to have a sense of humor to survive in this life. I'm going to explain that to you. I'm going to give you an incident right about a sense of humor that I have that I think saved me some money. I'm going to tell you about that. This is interesting. Quite a spiritual topic. Very spiritual. Then we're going to get to some letters. That's right. After that, letters. So there's the order of things. Paul's stand-up routine in Caesarea in front of King Agrippa. My personal experience where I think a sense of humor saved me possibly $300. And your letters all here on the Martin Zender Show. And I am Martin Zender, your host, into a scriptural extravaganza. Some people only take you through extravaganzas. No, here you get extravaganzas, and I am happy to bring this to you. Thanks for tuning in. Now, Acts 26, the Apostle Paul is in Caesarea fighting for his life. He's on trial. He's taken to Rome to escape the wrath of the Jews, and he's in the custody of Festus, who's just a lightweight proconsul guy, whatever. And then here comes the big boy, King Agrippa, and Paul's going to get a hearing in Caesarea from King Agrippa, and he arrives with great pomp, great circumstance, with Bernice. You might say Bernice. Oh, no, it's Bernice. That's the way she liked it to be pronounced, and I want to give her this respect to her. So they arrived at Caesarea, and they're going to hear the Apostle Paul. So Agrippa says to Festus, I'm intending to hear this man. Tomorrow, we're going to hear this guy. That's Acts 25:22. Now, here comes King Agrippa. Big pageantry, and he enters into the audience chamber. I'm in 23, verse 23 of Acts 25. Agrippa and Bernice coming with much pageantry and entering into the audience chamber together, besides captains and prominent men of the city. And at Festus's order, Paul was led forth. And Festus is saying, King Agrippa and all men present, you are beholding this man concerning the entire multitude of the Jews pled with me, both in Jerusalem and in this place, imploring that he must not by any means be living any longer. I like how they really put that in a nice little package. He should by no means be living any longer. They're not going to say he should die. Now, this is much pageantry here. Courtroom session, legalese existed even back then, insisting that he should not live any longer. Oh, that doesn't sound so bad, really. As long as I don't die, it's fine if you don't want me to live any longer. So I like the language here. I like that euphemism. Very, very dignified, very... deceiving, very falsely comforting. But anyhow, so Paul appeals to Agrippa. Agrippa permits Paul to speak, and he speaks, and he goes through his entire story. Very eloquent. Paul is very honest. I'm sure he looks the king in the eye. He probably shook his hand when he came into the audience chamber. Now, I would recommend this. I recommended this to my boys, and some of you may need this advice. Here's how you get a job, any job in this country or anywhere, because the bar is so low today. People are so lacking of social skills that what I'm about to tell you will land you a job and serve you well in this life. All you have to do, that's what I told my boys, and they've all been very successful. You shake somebody's hand firmly and look them in the eye. That's all you have to do. I mean, you should do more, but today the standards are so low. People mumble. They can't look at you. Their attention span is 8 milliseconds. And so all you have to do is be steady, be calm, look somebody in the eye, shake their hand firmly. If somebody doesn't shake your hand firmly, tell them to throw it back into water. I've told people that. They give me this handshake that's like, oh, spaghetti. And I'm like, throw it back in the water. I won't take it. I won't have it. I won't have that. Give me a firm handshake. Look me in the eye. So Paul did this as he's pleading his case, and he appeals. I can see the arm gestures, with swooping arm gestures toward King Agrippa. And Agrippa's in the grip of Paul's testimony here. It's plain he's falling under Paul's spell. Because at the very end here, Acts 26:28, yet Agrippa said to Paul, briefly, are you persuading me to make me a Christian? In other words, if you talk for 5 more seconds, you're going to make me what you are, because you're the most convincing, charming man I've ever met. And Paul was very charming. He could be. Yet Paul says this, and this is the stand-up comedy routine. He says, may I wish to God that briefly as well as greatly, not only you, but also all who are hearing me today, become such a kind as I am. In other words, I wish you would become as I am. Not only you, but everybody standing here and everybody in this whole province. And then he looks down at his hands and he says, well, except for these chains. That's the word here, outside of these bonds. So picture it. See, the Greek text, they can't get the timing in. Paul had the timing of Jack Benny, but they can't translate the timing of Paul's remarks. So picture this. The guy's manacled, and he's just given this, gesturing as well as he can, manacled. He's giving this inspired oratory. I don't know how inspired it is. Paul says, well, you're right. No, you're right. Paul said he was not a good spokesperson, but this is what he did have. He had sincerity. And he was very honest, and people could tell he was honest. So he's gesturing and said, I wish everybody could be like that, could be like me. And then he looks down and goes, well, except for this. And he brought the house down, I'm convinced. They all laughed. Because the guy was making fun of his own circumstance. My point here, I'm driving at this point, is you will not survive handily in this life without a sense of humor. You have to laugh. You simply have to laugh. And Paul was able to make this, I almost wanted to say tight-assed, but I don't want to say that because that would offend some people. Paul is lending this solemn proceeding a touch of humor. I wish everybody was like me. Well, except for this little detail here on my wrist. And they all laugh, and Paul said, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be here all week. And the result of this is that both the king and the governor rose besides Berenice and those sitting together with them, and retiring, they spoke with one another, saying that nothing deserving of death or of bonds this man is committing. Now, Agrippa said to Festus, this man could have been released if he had not appealed to Caesar. So, this guy hasn't done anything wrong, and he's funny. We enjoy him. He's funny. So, I got a little souvenir from Colorado Springs. Besides emotional trauma, Colorado gave me a little ding in my windshield. I was on I-25 between Denver and Colorado Springs, and a rock came out of a truck or something, bounced off the road, dinged my windshield in the lower left-hand corner. No shattering or anything, but in the ensuing months, this crack has crept across the driver's side, and I'm a little bit of a procrastinator there. I'm kind of put off telling you that, but I said, it's about time to do something about this, you know, because if I'm going to take out a girl or something, it doesn't look good. You know, women look at two things, according to women. I'm just taking this at face value. They look at your car and your shoes. No, that's just what I heard. They look at your car and your shoes. That doesn't matter if you have an old car. It better not, because I have a 99 Ford Contour. That's an old car. But if you keep it in decent shape, they're going to be okay with it. But crack in the windshield, what's the matter with you? Why don't you get this crack in the windshield fixed? So I'm finally calling my State Farm guy. And I called him 2 days ago, David Horsfield. And yeah, David Horsfield, that's right. That's the Winbur operator. They don't call them operators? What do they call them? Okay, he's an agent then. He's the Winbur agent for State Farm. So I gave him a call 2 days ago. I didn't get him. I got his secretary. And I said, about a year and a half ago, I got a ding in my windshield, blah, blah. I just wonder if I'm covered. So she looked up my policy because I sure don't know what it is. And she says, you don't have comprehensive. You know, you just have this and that, so that doesn't count. I said, rats. I said, how much does that cost? Well, for another $38 a year, you can get comprehensive. I said, is that retroactive? She kind of tittered. I could hear it. I said, you just tittered, didn't you? No, I swear I didn't titter. You tittered. You laughed at me for thinking that could be retroactive. Pre-existing condition? No. So I said, oh, wait. All right. And I asked Clyde Lynn here how much that would cost me. He said, probably around $300. So I'm, that hurts, you know. So I hung up, so I just said, okay, I'll have to get in there to take this thing in. But I didn't know where you take your car around here to get a windshield replaced. So I thought I'd call the place back. And, I forgot to tell you, this lady on the phone, I said, well, what does comprehensive cover? She goes, anything but collision. I said, like what? She said, well, you know, like a grocery cart, you know, rolling into your car, or something like what happened to you, a stone bouncing in it, incidental things other than impact. And I'm trying to think, what the heck would that include? That the main thing seemed to be this grocery cart deal. And I said, well, does somebody have to push a cart? No, the wind has to blow it. So if the wind blows a grocery cart, if somebody gets mad at me and shoves a grocery cart, that's not covered. But if the wind, which is an act of God, blows the cart into my car. I'm covered. So I thought, well, I should have this. I got it. Anyway, I'm thinking, where do you go? So I called back about 20 minutes later, thinking that she would answer. Who answers the phone? None other than David Horsfield. Now, he's a believer. When I first went in there to get coverage, I kind of hit it off with this guy. He liked me because we were talking about God. And again, you look him in the eye, shake his hand firmly. It works wonders, folks. And the bar is so low today. People are so few social skills that if you even do this, you're in the upper 99 percentile. So I called David and I said, I was surprised that he answered. I said, hey, David, it's Martin Zender. He goes, hey, what's happening? I just talked to your secretary there, and she set me up with some extra insurance. And I told him the situation. I said, I got a ding in my windshield. And he goes, that's too bad. I said, yeah, but I did pick up this extra insurance, you know, so next time. He goes, what kind of insurance did you get? I said, well, I got the wind blowing a cart against your car insurance. That's what I called it. I said, I got the wind blowing a grocery cart into your car insurance. And he just started laughing. Like, what? This guy's an idiot. He says, you mean comprehensive? I said, yeah, I guess that's what it is. I call it wind blowing a grocery cart into your car insurance. And he just laughed. And he said, Martin, call me back in 2 weeks. I said, how come? He goes, just call me back in 2 weeks. I said, I think I like the sound of that. He goes, well, we'll see you in 2 weeks. And I think what he meant by that is, I'm going to call back in 2 weeks and he's going to say it's covered. It must be some 2 week period. I think he's bending the rules a little bit for me. And he's doing it because he likes me, and he likes me because I'm funny. Okay. And you need to be funny. Just quit taking yourself so seriously. Quit taking life so seriously. I'm going to get a quick letter in here. My time is almost up, but I'm going to read. Oh, we had to finish those questions. That's right. We started with questions. And the one question was in 1 Peter 3:19, Jesus preaching to the spirits. Did I finish that? I did go to 1 Peter, didn't I? Yeah. Being roused, being vivified in spirit, Jesus goes to the spirits in prison, not dead human beings. Now, here's the next question from this person who wrote in. How come then that Acts 2:31 is talking about Jesus' soul is not left in hell? Oh, I think we did that. That's right. That's right. It's a figure of speech. The soul doesn't literally go anywhere. Oh, yeah, Stephen, we covered that. Yeah. Okay, now, and what about Revelation 20:12? This is a great question. Listen to this. When the dead stand before God. Let's go there. But here's the rest of the question. To stand there, they must be made alive. Or is it like conscious souls standing there? Or is it resurrected people that are called dead because they are not reborn with the Holy Spirit? Actually, it's resurrected people that are called dead because we're distinguishing them from those who have already been made alive. It's a figure of speech called retention. Now, you may have read or heard, if you listen to the conference in Treasure Lake, that you can find at studyshelf.com, go to Treasure Lake, you will find a talk I gave called Prolepsis, my favorite figure of speech. Prolepsis is God calling what is not as if it were. You understand that figure of speech, and a lot of scripture will begin to make sense to you, besides the metaphor. Oh my gosh, you got to know about the metaphor. But now I'm going to talk about probably my third favorite figure of speech behind prolepsis, and the metaphor would have to be retention. And that's what we're looking at here in Revelation 20, verse 12. Listen to this. And I perceived the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. How can dead people stand? Martin, I see dead people, but they're standing. You said dead people aren't alive. Indeed, I did. They're called dead people because we're different. It's just a figure of speech. They're not literally dead. They're called dead because they were recently dead. Just like saying the deaf shall hear. Jesus said the deaf shall hear. That's a contradiction, isn't it? The deaf shall hear? That's impossible. Deaf people can't hear. Oh, but they're deaf. They're called deaf people because they're going to about to be able to hear. Did you get that right there? Now, they're going to about to be able to hear. So they're called deaf to differentiate them from people who have always been able to hear. You're not going to say those who always have been able to hear will hear. No, we're going to say the deaf will hear. That's startling because deaf people don't generally do that. Well, they do when they're healed by Jesus Christ. So we're going to call them deaf, even though that when they hear, they will no longer be deaf. Likewise, here at the Great White Throne, the dead will stand at the Great White Throne. How is that possible? It's a figure of speech. It means that those who have just been resurrected, those who have just been resurrected, the small and the great are raised, and the dead will be judged. Yes, those who have just been raised, distinguishing them from the people who have been raised a long time, namely us and the saints in Israel. All right, we got more questions here. As you can hear, I got like 3 pages of questions, and I got a long letter from a guy named Dave out west somewhere, and he's going to tell us about a near-death experience he had and how it brought him closer to God. This has been Martin Zender. We are one big happy family. Glad to be with you.